reading from Bridge of Birds, a novel of an ancient China that never was, by Barry Hugert. Chapter 17, A Miraculous Transformation. In a way, we were quite lucky. The Duke of Qin was continuing his tax trip with the Key Rabbit. Lotus Cloud was to rejoin them in a week or so, and in his absence we received a very considerate death sentence from the provincial governor, who was understandably annoyed because we had delayed his entrance into Lotus Cloud's bed.
"You may choose your own method for departing this earth," he yelled.
Then we were marched up to the roof of the tallest tower, and the door was bricked up. This left us the choice between slowly starving to death or jumping to the cobblestones 100 feet below. And I sat down miserably and buried my head in my hands. How much longer could the children last? 2 months? 3? The keen-eyed bonzes that the abbot had posted would stare in vain from the roof of the monastery because Master Li and Number 10 Ox were not going to return with the rest of the great root of power. I wept until I realized that some of the sounds were coming from below me, and with a startled sense of hope I saw that the soldiers were unsealing the door. Hope faded quickly when I understood that they were merely opening the door in order to shove another condemned prisoner up onto the roof, and as they bricked it up again, Master Li took note of a pair of little pig eyes, a bald and mottled skull, a sharp curving nose like a parrot's beak, the loose flabby lips of a camel, and 2 drooping elephant ears, from which sprouted thick tufts of coarse gray hair.
"Would you care to buy a goat?" he said with a polite bow.
To our astonishment, Miser Shen ran to embrace us with cries of joy.
"What good fortune!" he cried. "I had feared that I would never have the opportunity of thanking my benefactors in person."
"Benefactors?" I said.
"Thanking us," said Master Li. "For saving my life," cried Miser Shen. "If it had not been for you, the Key Rabbit would not have determined the extent of my wealth. And if he had not determined the extent of my wealth, he would not have invited me to tea. And if he had not invited me to tea, I would still be the stingiest and most miserable miser in China." "Lotus Cloud," he said proudly, "made a new man of me."
"Let me guess," Li Kao said. "A sheep bankrupted you in a week." Miser Shen drew himself up proudly.
"Great Buddha, no! Why, such was the extent of my wealth that it took the dear girl almost a month to reduce me to abject poverty. Of course, I owe a good deal to luck," he added modestly. "After Lotus Cloud ran through my countless chests of buried gold, I was able to get very good prices for my 8 businesses, my 6 houses, my carriages, my sedan chair, my horse, my 3 cows, my 10 pigs, my 20 chickens, my 8 savage guard dogs, my 7 half-starved servants, my..."
"Dear boy, do you happen to remember my young and beautiful concubine?"
"Vividly," I said.
"I was very lucky there, because I was able to buy 3 more days of Lotus Cloud by selling Pretty Ping to an up-and-coming young fellow in the brothel business. Lucky for Pretty Ping, too, because one of her customers fell in love with her and made her his number 3 wife. And now he showers her with the gifts and affection that she
never received from me. Poor girl, I treated her terribly, Miser Shen sighed. But then I was not truly human, because I had not yet met Lotus Cloud.
I am finding this fascinating, said Master Li. What did you do when you had nothing left to sell?
Why, I turned to crime, of course, said Miser Shen. I am particularly proud of my performance during the Dragon Boat Festival. It occurred to me that the boats originally raced to sacrifice to the spirit of Chu Yuan, who drowned himself as a protest against corrupt government, but that the festival has degenerated into little more than a professional boat race upon which vast sums are wagered. Well, there was the betting boat with the bookmakers and other dignitaries on board. There came the dragon boats skimming across the water, and there I came, walking upon the surface. I was on stilts, of course, and I wore an exact copy of the ancient ceremonial costume of Chu Yuan. And I had a long staff and a big black beard.
"Insolent dogs!" I roared. "You dare to turn the occasion of my honorable death into a sporting event? I shall smite you with pestilence, typhoons, and earthquakes!"
It was very effective, because I had covered my head with protective ointment and my false beard with pitch, and at that moment I set fire to the beard, said Miser Shen. When Chu Yuan came striding across the waves with a halo of flames around his head, the people on the betting boat dived into the water and swam for their lives, and I cut the anchor rope and climbed on board and sailed away with all the money. I spent every cent on pearls and jade, but the soldiers caught me before I could give it to Lotus Cloud. So here I am. Li Cao turned and stared at me.
This happy, vibrant fellow with an admirable talent for crime is Miser Shen, he said incredulously. Ox, this transformation is nothing short of miraculous.
He turned back to Miser Shen and bowed.
We must dispense with titles, he said. My surname is Li, and my personal name is Cao, and there is a slight flaw in my character. This is my esteemed client, Number 10 Ox. We have something important to do, so we must escape from this tower as soon as possible, and we would be honored if you would care to accompany us.
Miser Shen wiped tears from his eyes.
It has been 40 years since anyone wanted me to accompany them anywhere, he sniffled.
Unfortunately, there is no way to escape from this tower.
Something will turn up, Master Li said confidently. He was right, although when it turned up, he was as astonished as I was. There was a loud commotion at the gates, and a mob burst into the courtyard and demanded to see the governor. The governor stepped out, along with our porcupine merchant, and the mob parted to reveal a furious farmer, a cow, and two gentlemen of low appearance. A babble of voices drifted up to us, and we were able to piece together the following account. The farmer had heard a commotion in his pasture, and he had rushed out to discover that a bald gentleman was down on his knees with his arms wrapped lovingly around the legs of one of the farmer's prize cows. A fat gentleman, who was carrying a small funeral urn, was weeping his eyes out, and he turned and wept on the farmer's shoulder for a while. Then he recovered enough to relate a marvelous tale. The bald fellow's beloved mother had expired some time ago, and her son had honored her rather unusual request to be cremated. One night, the ghost of his mother came to see him in a dream,
and she expressed the wish to have her ashes placed among the Lohans at Lungmen. So the bald fellow and his dear friend had set forth with the ashes on the pious pilgrimage, only to discover that the ghost had something else in mind. The road to Lungmen passed by the farmer's pasture, and the cow had been waiting for them. The bald fellow had recognized the soft brown eyes immediately.
"Mother," he screeched, "my beloved mother has been reborn as a cow."
The reunion had been emotional, and the farmer was forced to shed a few tears himself as he watched it. The cow's eyes were streaming with tears of joy as she lovingly licked the bald fellow's skull.
"Mother, what joy to see you again," he sobbed, kissing her hairy legs.
What choice did the farmer have? He felt the warm glow of a deed well done as he watched his cow dwindle in the distance with the arms of the two gentlemen wrapped around its neck. He was only a gentleman farmer, and he was quite surprised when he was informed that cows always weep when they lick salt.
"And that includes salt that has been sprinkled upon a bald skull," the farmer yelled. "How dare you accuse us of fraud?" screamed pawnbroker Fang. "We shall sue," howled Ma the grub.
When the farmer took off in pursuit, he was joined by neighbors who had also experienced the wiles of Ma and Fang, and now they wanted the governor to hang these crooks from the highest tree.
"Lies! All lies!"
screamed pawnbroker Fang.
"We demand compensation for slander,"
howled Ma the grub. "Ox, oh, you know these creatures well. What will they do now?" asked Master Lee. "They will go on the offense," I said firmly. "I don't know how, but they'll manage it."
"Splendid. Gentlemen, let's get out of here."
There was a huge silk flag with a Duke's tiger emblem fluttering from a pole on top of the tower, and the soldiers were too interested in Ma and Fang and the lynch mob to notice when I cut it loose and hauled it down. From the wreckage of an old bamboo pigeon coop, we made a basket to stand in, and the lanyard from the pole attached the basket to the flag.
The principle is the same as that of a falling leaf, which drifts down gently because the air that pushes up against its surface almost counterbalances the weight that pushes it down, Master Lee explained. This flag may just be large enough to hold enough air, although I would be happier if the tower were another 100 feet high.
We tiptoed back to the other side of the tower to see how Ma and Fang were coming along. Bees were droning beside the wall, and Ma the grub was surprised to see a trail of honey. His fingers slid slyly toward the stuff. Our porcupine merchant had brought out a plate of sweetmeats, and he was automatically lifting them to his gaping mouth as he listened to the members of the mob bellow one accusation after another. Ma the grub craftily covered the ashes in the funeral urn with honey. He slid the urn beneath the merchant's fat fingers, and the hand lifted again and again to the insatiable maw.
"Monster!" Ma shrieked in horror. "Fang, look what these fiends are doing! First they try to steal the incarnation of your beloved mother, and now they devour her very ashes!"
"Cannibals!"
screamed pawnbroker Fang. He pried the merchant's mouth open and peered into the black hole.
"Mother, speak to me!"
he howled. Chaos ensued. and the soldiers in the courtyard converged upon the screaming pandemonium, and we dragged the flag and the basket to the rear of the roof. We climbed in, and I grasped the lanyards. "I have decided to ask the Yama Kings to let me be reborn as a three-toed sloth. An ox wishes to become a cloud. Do you have any preference?" Li Cao asked Miser Shen. "A tree," Miser Shen said promptly. "In this life, I have done nothing but foreclose mortgages, and when I am reborn, I would like to provide free shade for the weary, free roosts for the birds, free fruit for the hungry, and free firewood for woodcutters when I am old and useless. Peasants name their favorite trees, and it is the dearest wish of Miser Shen to be known as Old Generosity. I shall hang by my tail from one of your branches," said Master Li. "I shall drift overhead and bring rain for your roots," I said.
"I am overcome," Miser Shen sniffled.
"Farewell, tree. Farewell, cloud. Farewell, sloth." I pushed off, and we plunged toward the cobblestones like three bugs clinging to a boulder. I consigned my soul to heaven, and then the flag billowed wide, and we halted in midair so suddenly that my arms were nearly pulled from their sockets. "We must really stop somewhere and collect some pearls for Lotus Cloud," said Miser Shen. "And jade," I agreed.
"Incredible," sighed Master Li.
The wind caught the flag, and we drifted lazily away across the treetops toward a green valley where a river sparkled in the distance. The tower dwindled behind us, and we landed quite gently. And in the first village we bought a small boat and a great deal of wine. The Duke of Qin, like all his predecessors, continued his tax trip past the terrible desert of salt, and after drifting uneventfully downstream for 6 days, Li Cao found the landmark he was looking for. It was a tiny trail that ran from the bank toward a low hill, and the boat was light enough so that I could carry it over my head until we reached water again. It was a small, rapid stream, and as the days passed, it grew narrower and shallower. The air became very hot, and we began to perspire freely, and on the fourth day we floated around a bend, and I realized that the stream was disappearing, vanishing into cracks in the hard-caked earth. A blinding white glare was all that I could see of the horizon. The boat scraped bottom, and we climbed out to the bank, and Li Cao pointed ahead to the glare.
"The desert of salt," he said. "A peasant swear that when the Duke of Qin passes this way on his tax trip, his army reaches this point and then vanishes for days."
He searched for another landmark and pointed to a faint line that was barely visible beneath the white expanse of salt.
"Too straight to be the work of nature," he said. "Swirling salt will cover hoofprints and wheel tracks, but the underlying traces of a road will remain if it is used every year."
"Do you think that it leads to another treasure trove?" I asked.
"Well, it's an idea, and even a bad idea is better than none," said Master Li. "Error can point the way to truth, while empty-headedness can only lead to more empty-headedness, or to a career in politics. Miser Shen, now is the time when a wise man would turn back. If we keep chasing the Duke, we will eventually get back to Lotus Cloud, but the desert of salt has swallowed whole caravans, and our deaths are not likely to be pleasant."
"What is life without Lotus Cloud?" Miser Shen asked, quite reasonably from my point of view. "Besides, after a lifetime of disgrace, the least I can do is die with dignity." I was really astonished to see what a splendid fellow had been lurking behind a skinflint's exterior, and that night I learned a great deal about Miser Shen. We emptied our wine jars and filled them with water, and I cut the sail of the boat to make a tent. Then we followed the faint path into the desert, and just before dawn we crawled into the tent to protect ourselves from the direct rays of the sun. Miser Shen was afraid that we might think badly of Lotus Cloud for having accepted the love of someone so old and ugly as him, and he begged to be allowed to tell his story.
"Many years ago, I was a happy man," he said in a shy, halting voice. "I was a peasant, and I was poor. But I had a small farm, and a wife who loved me, and the most adorable little daughter in the world. We almost always had enough to eat, and I never dreamed of asking for more. Then our village fell on hard times. The rain would not fall, or if it did, it fell so hard that our dikes broke and our crops were washed away. Our animals fell sick, and bandits bullied us and stole our rice. And then one day we learned that the Duke of Qin, the father of the present duke, had doubled the taxes. We could not possibly pay such a tax. The men of the village drew lots, and I was the unlucky one who was sent to plead to the duke. There were many peasants waiting to plead for lower taxes, so I spent hours rehearsing my speech. When my time came, I fell upon my knees in front of the throne, and I told the duke of all the hardships that had come to my village. I know that I told my story well. When I had finished, I raised my eyes to the terrible tiger mask, and the voice of metal frightened me, but the words brought joy to my heart. "Shen Chun Li," said the duke, "today I have heard many tales from those who wish to cheat me, but your story rings true. I am convinced that you cannot pay my tax, and I will grant you a very special favor. Go home to your village, and tell your family and friends that never again shall the village of Shen Chun Li be asked to pay taxes to the dukes of Qin. Not so long as the stars shine in the sky and the fish swim in the sea." I kissed the floor and bowed backward from the presence of the duke, and my feet had wings as I raced over the hills. I could not run as fast as his horsemen could ride, however. And when I had climbed the last hill, I stared down at smoldering ruins. The duke had sworn that never again would we pay taxes, and then he had destroyed my village as an example to others. The only villagers who had been spared were those who had been away fishing at a nearby lake, and one of those was my wife. We wept in each other's arms. "But do you remember that I had a little daughter? Her name was Ah Chen, and I loved her more than anything in the world, and she had been left behind in the village and had been killed with the others. I was wild with grief. I saw the face of my little girl everywhere, and at night I would hear her crying in the woods, and I would run out and shout, 'Ah Chen, your father is here!' They said that I would feel better if I sent a prayer to her. I could not read or write, so I went to a priest who wrote down my prayer and burned it to send to hell, where my little girl had gone to be judged. I did not feel better. I could not work, and I could not sleep. And one day a traveler told of a great magician who lived in a cave at the end of Bear's Path, high in the Omei Mountains. 'He is called the Old Man of the Mountain,' the traveler told me. 'He is the wisest man in the world, and he can surely bring your little girl back to life. But you must bring money. You must bring a great deal of money, because the Old Man of the Mountain does not sell his secrets cheaply.' I had no money, so I set out to make some. Like anyone who sets out to make money, I lied and cheated, and I ruined my friends. But nothing mattered except getting enough money to bring little Ah Chen back to life. Beloved husband, you must forget our daughter, my wife told me. If you continue this way, you will surely go insane. Then she fell ill, but I was too busy making money to care for her. She died, and I wept, but I went right on making money. The money mattered, only the money, and I could not spend a penny of it because I would need it all for the old man of the mountain. I was not aware of losing my mind, but as the years passed, I forgot what the money was for. Now and then I would remember, but I would tell myself that I needed twice as much money to pay the wisest man in the world to bring my daughter back to life. I buried gold in chests and ran out to grab for more. I became Miser Shen, the greediest and most miserable of men. And so I would have remained if Lotus Cloud had not bankrupted me and brought me to my senses. Noble sirs, there are women who can see right into the heart of a man, and I would like you to know that Lotus Cloud never accepted the love of Miser Shen. She accepted the love of a poor peasant who loved his little girl too much and who went insane.